Hi, and welcome to the Changes Ahead podcast.
Giving space to the often unheard questions,
doubts,
hopes,
and challenges facing the church in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Kathy, and we invite you to join us as we imagine the changes ahead.
Welcome back to the Changes Ahead podcast, Kathy. It's nice to be starting season three, albeit a little later than perhaps I had at least initially imagined.
That's right, it's April.
Can you believe it?
We're fully into the year already.
So thanks to all of you for your patience and to those of you who have been asking, you know, when's the next episode coming out? We really appreciate the encouragement that has been.
And Stephen, we're starting later in the year because there's been some changes for both of us. I've already had a 3-month sabbatical.
Yep.
And you're about to go on your sabbatical. So this year, we still want to be a part of the ongoing conversation about what are the changes ahead for the church. So instead of a fortnightly release, we're looking at monthly.
And this year's guests are all coming with a particular lens of expertise in either their field or perhaps their life. And so it is a little bit more focused on topics or issues this year. So to our first episode, we get the chance to speak to Sarah about her work in anti-trafficking. And simply the thing that stands out to me is the weight of this topic. It's really heavy listening to the stories that she shares, listening to the statistics she shares. And there are a number of times throughout the conversation where I was feeling like I'd prefer not to know this. I'd prefer to look away from this tragedy that is unfolding every day around our world and even in our country.
And Stephen, I think that's a really important reflection because you can't unsee what you have been exposed to. And I think this is something that she highlighted, how much it had even changed her. That there is this difference between the old Sarah and the new Sarah because of what she had experienced. And I think too, what really stood out for me is this understanding that it's here in New Zealand. And the responsibility that we have as followers of Jesus to be involved in that kind of justice. And what I want to end with is that I loved her hopefulness. Despite that this is an overwhelming topic, there is something that we can do and things that we can be aware of.
So let's listen into this conversation with Sarah.
Since the pandemic, economic downturn, wars, millions more people are being left vulnerable. And it is the vulnerable that traffickers target. It's targeting women, it's targeting men, it's targeting children in every single country in the world, including here in New Zealand.
Today, I am really pleased to welcome Sarah Scott-Webb to the Changes Ahead podcast. And Sarah, I have been really looking forward to this conversation because you are so interesting to talk to. And you bring insight and understanding to a very important subject that I know is close to your heart, which is modern day human trafficking. And so welcome. Thanks for coming to talk to us.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the invitation. It's lovely to be here.
And what's really lovely again today is that Sarah is sitting in my dining room, so I get to talk to her face to face, and that just makes it extra special.
Especially over a good cup of coffee. Thank you.
Yes, we've already had a nice coffee each. Sarah, there is always a backstory as to how someone gets to where they've got to, because you didn't just arrive at having a real heart and passion for this. So tell us a little bit about you and how did you get here?
Good question. Well, I'll start off by aging myself and saying that for me, it was probably in the mid-80s, way back in the days of Band-Aid and Live Aid. And I was a young teenager at that time, and I remember very clearly not only staying up all night to watch it, or all 48 hours or whatever it was, but just being overwhelmed with the sense of unfairness and injustice, and it just wasn't right that in our world there was this extreme famine happening in one part of the world when we had so much excess in other parts. And it was just that incredible injustice that I really felt over that. And that continued to stay with me over coming years. It took me a while to find my faith, and wasn't until my later 20s that I really decided to get serious about following Jesus. And I was in Christchurch attending Spraydon Baptist, now Southwest, and was able to learn from Murray Robertson. And I remember really clearly one time he was preaching from the book of Amos, and he was saying that we all, every single one of us, is called to respond to issues of poverty and justice. We're all called in different ways. And he went through a list of different ways. And when he got to saying, some of us are called to speak and advocate about matters of injustice in our world, I literally had to hang on to my seat, because I felt, I didn't recognize it was the Holy Spirit at the time, but I just felt this Holy Spirit come over me in such a way, I was scared I was going to jump up on the stage and take that mic off him and start a, start preaching to the masses. But it was sort of from there that the Lord just kept refining this righteous anger around issues of injustice within me. I worked as a music teacher for a number of years, but as part of this process, the Lord called me from that quite dramatically to go and work at World Vision, where again I had the opportunity to work in various justice-related fields. And then in 2005 and 6, I actually went to Cambodia and did a short-term mission there. I was teaching music at a school, and one day a week I was volunteering at an aftercare home, which was a home that had been set up to help young girls aged 4 to 14 who were being rescued from brothels. And I went there one day a week, and I worked as a music therapist. And I don't think I had any idea prior to that, that people were bought and sold, that young girls as young as 3 and 4 were being bought and sold for sexual exploitation. And it absolutely broke my heart. And when I left Cambodia, I heard really clearly from the Lord, you know, this is where I want you to be. This is where I want you to devote yourself to stopping this trade in women and girls. And that's largely what I've done since, mainly in the nonprofit sector with World Vision and Hagar New Zealand here. And then for the last 7 years, I've actually been co-leading SIM International's global anti-trafficking work. So overseeing anti-trafficking prevention work mostly in about 17, 18 countries. And in recent times, I've also been serving the World Evangelical Alliance as one of their anti-trafficking specialists. So that's my journey.
Wow. That hits close to home. I've got a 4-year-old daughter. And so imagining that kind of experience for her, it turns my stomach. You've encountered, actual humans of that age.
It had a really profound impact on me. And the reason I got called in to do this music stuff was because these kids were coming in and they were just so traumatized, they couldn't speak. And some of them, it took weeks before they would speak. And so even though they had counselors there, they couldn't communicate. So they were using music and art to just try and help these kids express some of the trauma that they had been through. But
and you're highlighting again something, you know, it's when we have these experiences, we can't unhave them.
Yeah, it's so true.
And they fundamentally change us. You know, you already had the strong sense of wanting to be a voice, but that experience that left you changed.
It really did, in such a profound way. And it was one of those experiences, well, that there was no going back from. And because I felt such a strong sense of calling when I left Cambodia, to me there's been no choice. Like, this is just what I have to do.
Can you talk a little bit about how you changed? Like, what was that change like for you? What was the before Sarah and to the now Sarah?
I think the before Sarah was unaware. I had no idea. I grew up on a farm in the middle of the South Island. Okay, so there was definitely no slavery or anything happening there when I was growing up anyway. I was unaware. I had never experienced living in a context like Cambodia anyway, you know, with the levels of poverty and just the amount of injustice you witness in daily life, children begging, you know, people being disfigured through acid attacks and things like that anyway. So I think it was the change over the whatever 15 months that I was there was a change of growing awareness, growing empathy, understanding. And as far as the justice part of it for me, I felt this gradual refining. Like I'd said, I'd had this stirring for a long time, and I knew this was something that the Lord was really pushing at buttons in me really strongly. But it was this experience of working with these young kids in Cambodia that it felt like it just, this is it, like that pointy part of the arrow, like this is the refining. And so I guess the big change for me was like a focus.
Cool. Yeah. Wow.
So you're really highlighting how much understanding changes us. We need that.
Yes, we do.
And so I suppose that's the question. So help build us a picture. Help us understand what is actually going on.
What is going on in the world at the moment in terms of modern slavery and human trafficking? And we often use those terms interchangeably there. So you'll sometimes hear one and not the other. But what is happening, particularly over the last few years post-pandemic, is we know numbers are rocketing. Because since the pandemic, economic downturn, wars, millions more people are being left vulnerable. And it is the vulnerable that traffickers target. So before the pandemic, the most reliable statistics we had, which had come from the International Labour Organization, estimated conservatively that on any given day, there are approximately 50 million people in slavery in our world at any one day.
Can we just pause for like, are you serious?
I am serious. We also talk about the fact too that there are actually more people in slavery today than at any other time in history.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know about you, Stephen, but it's kind of mind-blowing because it's easy to think it was in the Bible times. It was in ancient times.
Yes.
But we're a modern people now.
And we also think, oh, Wilberforce came and did his thing and the abolition of slavery and therefore it was done. But unfortunately, it's always been there and it's just escalating in our world today. It's targeting women. It's targeting men. It's targeting children in every single country in the world, including here in New Zealand.
That's probably quite a shock or confronting reality to our listeners. It's certainly, you know, it's a shock to me in thinking about that in New Zealand. Can we talk a little, obviously the situations you experienced in Cambodia are horrific, but yeah, it's kind of, it's easy to, for me at least, to imagine that being over there, right? Over in a country
very much
long way away from us, and we're so much better, quote unquote, than that. And yet it's, you're saying it impacts New Zealand, or it's happening in New Zealand. So can you talk to us a little bit about what that looks like?
I will. And just before I talk to sort of what actually is going on in New Zealand, I think one of the myths that sort of surrounding slavery and human trafficking, particularly within the Christian sector, is we do tend to have an idea that human trafficking is the sex trafficking of girls and children overseas, like the movie Sound of Freedom. Therefore, we think, oh, that's what it looks like. I can't see that happening here. Therefore, it's not happening here. We also think that's what it looks like. Oh, I'm not equipped to go and rescue them. Therefore, I can't do anything. So one of the big sort of challenges is actually helping people understand, yes, sex trafficking happens, but it happens to about 12% of that 50 million.
Wow.
It's a relatively small percentage. By far, the biggest number of people who have been trafficked into situations of slavery are men and women and kids who have been trafficked into situations of forced labor. So they've been tricked into accepting a job that is nothing like what they were promised. They've been tricked into a job where they're not being paid, they're not able to leave, they might have their passports taken. And that we have a lot of in New Zealand. I know when we were first sort of talking a few months ago, there was a number of things coming up in the news about migrant workers that were being found in houses in Papakura, in Henderson, not being called modern slavery and not being called in the media human trafficking, but that is what it is. These are vulnerable migrant, I think in both of the cases I'm thinking of, they were men. They were houses that had more than 20 people living in them. They had been promised great jobs. They had had to pay $10,000 to $20,000 each to a recruiter for the pleasure of coming here to get this job, and then were literally locked in these houses without food and left. That, unfortunately, is what we do have a lot of here in New Zealand. We also do have people who have been trafficked into situations of sexual exploitation. We are known as a destination country for women coming from Asia. And we do, unfortunately, also have what is called domestic sex trafficking within the country, where there is quite a bit of children being exploited as well. So that's what it looks like here. And it is estimated as well that in New Zealand, and this is a statistic from the Walk Free Foundation with their Global Slavery Index last year, estimating there is more than 8,000 people currently in situations of slavery in Aotearoa.
Wow.
But because we don't know what it looks like, we don't see it. We here in our media, I can think of situations, it's often called worker exploitation of people in retail sectors, in restaurants who are not treating their workers well, and then it gets investigated and then they find out actually this has slipped beyond exploitation into actually a situation of slavery.
And it's even confronting our own myths that we have about our country, because, you know, I hear it all the time, and there's parts of us that still want to believe this, that we live in a paradise.
Yes.
And we do. I mean, it is a paradise. And it's really confronting to think, do I really want to see? Because what you have been showing me in my conversations with you, that once you see something, you can't unsee it.
So sorry.
So there's a little part of me is like, do we really want to see it? Because it's confronting.
I think a lot of people would prefer not to see it.
Yeah. And I think we have to actually possibly start there to even acknowledge, oh, yes, do I really want to know that there are 8,000 people that are being, you know, trafficked right now in New Zealand?
With knowledge comes responsibility. And that's the challenge, I think, for all of us, that once we learn and we become aware and we know how this works and we know what it looks like, we know who's at risk or potentially at risk, what do I do with that? And as a Christian, how can I not do something?
Mm.
You know, it's challenging. And I think that's part of the challenge in responding to an issue like this, is that there is that responsibility that once we do know, what do we do with that knowledge?
Mm.
Mm.
Sarah, recently I was chatting with some people who had been working for decades in Bangladesh, and they were lamenting about the fact that in their time there, they watched the traffickers get more organized and choose to work together to become more efficient at their work. And at the same time, they watched the different organizations who were anti-trafficking become less effective because they were so focused on what they were trying to do, and there was a hesitancy to work together while the traffickers were all about working together to become more efficient. I want us to come back to the New Zealand stuff definitely, but it's just, I'm wondering, can you speak to that? What are you noticing there? And what can we do about that, you know, when we're thinking about...
What a fantastic question and observation. I'll take it in two parts. First of all, your friends had noticed that traffickers were becoming more and more and more organized.
Mm.
Not just organized, but sophisticated.
Right.
And I think this is something as well that we often don't consider. And that's, you know, 90%+ of all human trafficking is actually run by gangs, by international organized criminal networks.
Right.
And they are very sophisticated in the routes that they use and the means that they use to move people and drugs and weapons and everything else that they do. Some of the most disturbing maps I've seen are maps of human trafficking routes that organized criminal gangs use to move people around the world. They are really complex with a lot of corruption at various points along it. So that is, it's really true. As technology has developed, criminal networks are utilizing that at a great rate of knots, and they are very sophisticated, very, very well organized. And that is one of the reasons why the statistics just keep increasing, because they have been ahead of the game. The NGO response has been lagging for a number of reasons. Lack of funding is a big one. So I've been doing this for quite a number of years now. And what has sort of happened, I would say, in the last 3 to 4 years in particular, is there has been almost like a pause or a recognition in the global anti-trafficking sector, addressing exactly what your friends observed, saying, actually, we've got to stop doing our own thing. The only way that we are going to catch up and get ahead of the traffickers and their sophistication is if we collaborate, if we actually work together, if we all recognize we're doing our own little piece of the puzzle, and for us to actually make progress in this area, we have to be championing each other. We have to be collaborating and working together. And that shift is underway, and it's starting to happen. With my work with the World Freedom Network, which is part of the World Evangelical Alliance, I'm part of a group at the moment. We are actually crafting a new narrative, for want of a better word, for the anti-trafficking movement going forward. And one of the key parts of that is collaborative solutions. You know, we have to be working together. So that wasn't the case, but is becoming the case. And it's actually quite exciting.
Cool.
I love that word. What a great word. Collaborative solutions.
Great. I love it too.
Thank you. Coming back, I know I distracted us, coming back from to the New Zealand situation, because if I know of stuff that's happening in the country that I live in, I can't use that excuse of, oh, that's just over there, right? So I guess we've talked about your experiences changing you, but also understanding changing you. What do we need to understand about our New Zealand context to begin to think about how we can respond?
We need to be able, I think, to hold that tension of, yes, we do live in paradise, as you mentioned earlier, but as we are very aware here in New Zealand, we've got a lot of brokenness in our society. We've got a lot of things that aren't working so well. And unfortunately, you know, human trafficking and slavery, it's not an isolated thing. Doesn't happen on its own. Wherever you have a society that has dysfunction and brokenness and addiction and family violence and gang involvement and all these other things, that's where you will find human trafficking, because traffickers prey on people who are vulnerable. So it exists with that. And I think one of the things we need to do is accept it is happening here. We're not immune.
Yep.
And I think that's the first part, is accepting it is happening. Starting to learn, well, what does it look like? Yes. What actually is happening here?
Yeah, because that was my question.
What, yeah.
Paint a picture. You gave us one before about people coming in falsely and thinking they've got jobs.
Well, I'll share a story with you. One thing that really helped, I guess, shift my mindset in terms of trafficking over there to trafficking here was a few years ago, I was speaking at ARA, which is the Polytech down in Otatahi in Christchurch. And after my colleague and I had finished speaking, a young woman came up to us and said, please, can we have coffee? I need to tell you my story. And we went and had coffee with her, and she was probably around 30, maybe early 30s. And she told us her story, which was of a young teenager, family broken up. She got into using drugs at school, and the supplier to the school was like, well, actually, come with me. I'll introduce you to the supplier. And soon she found herself trafficked into a gang. And for the next 10 years, she was trafficked from Christchurch to Wellington to Gold Coast, back again. The stories she told were as horrific as anything I have heard at any other time from any other survivor of trafficking and slavery. And she grew up about 6 kilometres from where I lived.
Wow.
Wow.
You know, it happens here. And I think one of the things that we need to start, you know, not just becoming aware that it happens here, but as an understanding, well, if it's happening here, who's at risk? Like,
yes, who is at risk?
Who is at risk? Well, unfortunately, here in New Zealand, it's exactly the same as in just about every other place in the world, and that traffickers target disproportionately the same few groups, and that is children and young people, particularly those who are orphaned or who are in care or who are on the streets or who have experienced family violence. They're vulnerable and they're really searching for validation and value and that sense of love and that bit of attention. Traffickers also target people who experience significant trauma. They also target refugees and migrants because, again, they come to a new situation. They don't have a support system. They're vulnerable. And this is who is at risk in our country as well. It is our young people, particularly as well now the dangers of digital exploitation are happening, not just scamming, but being groomed online. It's horrific, the dangers that is increasing as well for our young people online through social media, through WhatsApp and messaging groups and all those sorts of things. So young people in particular, our migrant communities, our refugees, people with trauma, those are the people who are most at risk in our country. It might sound a little weird as well to follow that by saying that that is also where I see a huge role for the church.
Well, because I was going to ask that question, you know, what... This sounds terrible, but why should we care?
Why should we care? A, because it's happening in our communities. B, Because my understanding of the gospel is that that's what Jesus tells us to do. Mm. You know, I sometimes wonder why people make it so complicated, but I read Luke 4:18. Jesus came to preach the good news, to care for the vulnerable and free the oppressed. And as his disciples and followers, we are called to do what he did, which is to preach the good news, to care for the vulnerable and free the oppressed.
So you're saying the good news is caring for the vulnerable and freeing the oppressed?
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Is that putting it out there a bit much? But
well,
I do.
How could they be separated?
They can't. They can't. And I think for me personally, this is one of the frustrations I do have with the church. And I love the church, but I do get very frustrated when often it becomes all about the preaching and the evangelism. And, you know, yes, I know that's important, but we sometimes forget the other parts too. It's like we're not just called to talk, we're called to show Jesus's love, be his hands and feet, care for those in need, free those who are oppressed. Can you tell I get a bit wound up about this?
And rightly so. Right, we need this kind of voice to wind us up about it.
Well, I think that it does, you know, yes, there are some church communities within New Zealand who are responding to this. So I'm not going to make a blanket statement and say nobody's doing anything, because there are some really exciting things happening in some places. But I can also think of other churches where, you know, people rock along on a Sunday and we you know, hear messages and theology that's very much about the preaching. We don't tend to hear a lot of messages about justice, in my experience. We don't tend to hear a lot of messages about actually what does caring for the vulnerable look like here in Aotearoa. What does it look like for our church community if we were to take what Jesus did seriously and do that? What would it mean for our church community to care for the vulnerable? What would it mean for our church community to be freeing the oppressed? Because that's what we're called to do. And I don't think we get a lot of that balanced messaging.
And we do need a voice like yours, because it's because I have been around you more recently and I'm catching it. It's like I feel that energy. It's actually helping me to want to care. And I love too how you pointed us back to Amos, that Amos does give us this picture that true worship must embody justice and love of neighbor. And we have separated that. But I think too, what you're also doing is you're encouraging me, because I get the feeling that there is something I can do, because you also will bring some understanding of, well, what can we do?
Yes.
It's not just this overwhelming picture.
Absolutely not. And this is something I do have friends who say to me, Sarah, how can you be so excited and so positive when you spend all your day diving into this horrible stuff? And the reason is because of my faith. And I know that Jesus has won this victory. He's won this battle, full stop. So one day everyone's going to be free. You know, we're on, this is a spiritual battle, but we are on the side that has actually won. So it's not hopeless. It's not hopeless, but, you know, God is calling us to join him in bringing his kingdom here on earth, which is bringing freedom and bringing justice. And I find that really exciting, because it's like we're not having to look at this. I think sometimes we do tend to think, oh, it's too overwhelming, or we think, oh, it's just too evil. I can't do anything. I don't know where to start. But I think we can start by knowing this is God's will. He longs for everyone to be free. He longs for everyone to be working with him in bringing justice.
And that's the hope. But that's the hope.
And that does.
That holds you, because I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking. How do you hold so much anguish and pain, even that story that you told us of the young woman that came to you. And how do you hold that when your heart just wants to break? So I love that you are putting a framework around it of this overarching hope that we have.
So this podcast, we're the Changes Ahead podcast, reflecting on what needs to change within the church for us to thrive and actually participate well in the ministry of Jesus in the world. And so I guess the question to get practical from that perspective is what would you love to see change within the church? What do you most long for to see? You've touched on some of this, but let's unpack this a bit more. What would you really love to see change within the church in this area?
I would love to see the church full stop, but I'll say the church in Aotearoa. I would love to see the church here, every church, every believer, just stepping up into the space of protecting the vulnerable and freeing the oppressed. That it's not this big, difficult thing. It's just part of who we are as the church. If someone's in need, we reach out and we help them. We build relationships with those that are on the margins in our communities, those that are vulnerable in our communities. We just reach out and be that protective network, because, you know, one of the things we talked earlier about, the people who are most at risk of being trafficked, and what they all have in common is they've all experienced great insecurity and uncertainty and fear and abandonment. They all have experienced a great lack in self-esteem and self-worth as a result. And the other factor they all have in common is they lack a protective social network, whether that be family, extended whānau, whether that be whatever community. But, you know, think of a young person who's orphaned. Think of a migrant who's come to our country. They've lost their protective social network. And we are the church. That's who we are. You know, it's telling and showing people their worth and their sense of value that comes from the Lord, you know, and being that protective social network to those on the margins in our communities. That's just who we are. And I would long to see us actually stepping into that and owning it, and maybe seeing too that some of the outreach or the community ministries that we already do, as well as the reason you've set it up, by ministering and serving and connecting with this vulnerable group of people, you are actually keeping them safe. You are actually protecting them, because you're building that strong protective relationship. And I'd love to see the church understanding that. I'd love to see them getting that, and I'd love to see them owning it, because I think if the church started to do that in our country, we would have a huge turnaround, not just in terms of numbers being trafficked, but all sorts of social challenges we've got going on. It's exciting. It's exciting. I think one of the statements that I've been talking a lot about with a colleague in Australia at the moment is, like, you know, we're not looking at this issue from this place where nothing's happened. We're looking at this place where God is already doing stuff. And, like, he's extending an invitation to us, come and join me in what I'm already doing. You know, come and join me. And I find that incredibly exciting.
So just taking it down to your average person.
Yes.
So I live in my house.
Yes.
And I go to my church building.
Yes.
Where do I see the vulnerable people? I hear what you're saying. You're talking about creating social connectivity, because then when people are taken care of and more social networks, they are less vulnerable. So how do I see that in between my house and my church building?
For some people, that is going to be very easy. Yes. For others, that is going to be extremely difficult. But what I would suggest is ask the Lord to show you. You know, vulnerable people don't always sit on the side of our road, you know, with a sign saying, I'm homeless. It could be someone that you come across at the library, someone you come across when you're dropping the kids off at school, who is struggling, or who, you know, may be a victim of abuse or something like that. Ask the Lord to show you. Ask him to give you his eyes to see people as he sees them. Who is it, Lord, that you need me to connect with? And I think once, if you started praying along those lines, you would start to see the people that need that connection, that need that relationship being built. Another one as well, I think too, is most of us know a young person and they are at huge risk online. Most of our young people are on smartphones, and it could even be as simple as spending 15 minutes Googling digital exploitation or looking up. We've got a great website here in New Zealand, netsafe.org, which has got a lot of resources there. Read some of that and then simply be, hey, young person in my life, did you know about this? Young person, when you're on social media, do you have the location turned off? And just start engaging with those conversations as well.
So even just being informed.
Informed, yeah.
At that level. And you're saying this NetSafe is a great resource.
It's a great resource for whānau, for family, for parents, for young people themselves. They've got resources in a lot of different Pacifica languages as well. It's not just in English. So it's a great resource to help start those conversations.
And if you wanted to connect with a group of people, where would you suggest they look? If you wanted to like get involved and say like, you know, the type of work that you're doing.
Contact me. What I would suggest would be, if you're interested in finding out more, you know, we do have some great organisations here in New Zealand. I think particularly Tear Fund, World Vision, they both have really strong anti-trafficking programs. Find out more about that if you are interested in giving or volunteering or whatever. But I would also say you're very welcome to contact me, because part of what I am developing at the moment is an Oceania Freedom Network, which is hugely exciting. Within the sort of global space, the World Evangelical Alliance has established a World Freedom Network with the goal of mobilizing the church to be able to respond to justice and injustice and human trafficking and slavery. I'm on the leadership team for that, and part of that role is setting up a network here in our region for anyone faith-based who wants to learn how to respond. So we're going to be connecting with anti-trafficking organizations and helping facilitate network for them. But also the thing that really excites me is being able to be a resource for people like you, you know, who just, I want to do something. Where do I start? How do I get my church involved? You know, we want to do something, but we don't know what to do. And, you know, our vision is to really help, you know, ignite that spark and fan that flame within the church in Aotearoa and Australia and in the Pacific, because it's an increasing problem in our region, unfortunately. But we've got the church here poised to be able to respond.
I just wish our listeners could just get the feeling that I'm getting sitting here with Sarah. It is, you just can't help but feel that inspiration from you. You actually make me feel like it's possible, which says to me that you are in exactly the right place, because you're an enabler. And I also know that there is another thing in the pipeline for you. So let's just give this a little bit of a plug. You're also hoping to start your own podcast. So just tell us a little bit about that. What is coming, so people can be aware that that's
brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, I'm working, speaking of collaborative solutions, I'm collaborating a lot with my good friend and colleague, Sammy Miller from the Salvation Army. And we are planning to launch a podcast to raise awareness of trafficking and slavery here in New Zealand. And we are going to be releasing that on July 30th, because that is the International Day Against Human Trafficking. And the podcast is going to be called Traffic Light. So shining the light on human trafficking here in New Zealand. So we're just planning to have 6 episodes, and we're going to be talking with some of the experts we have here in our country, asking them questions about what is going on, and then talking about, well, what can we do about it? It's very exciting.
It does sound very exciting.
Because there's not a lot of resources out actually telling people what is going on. So we're like, well, how can we help fill that gap?
Well, we'll be very happy to plug that when that comes out. But it's awesome. It's really exciting to hear that that is coming up. Cool. So what are some other really practical steps that people, our listeners, can take that will help them get involved and help perhaps get them to get their churches more involved in this space?
Fantastic question. Obviously, start with getting informed, but then some other simple things that people in churches can do. One is to be really start to think about your shopping habits. Mm-hmm. And I know we've just come through Easter. We have a lot of chocolate around, but it could be simple things like, actually, there is a great site called the chocolatescorecard.com that lists all the ethical and sustainable chocolates available. And you might make a decision, actually, I'm only going to buy Whittaker's chocolate and not Cadbury's because Whittaker's is way more ethical than Cadbury's. You might decide to really look into the websites of clothing brands and find out, well, actually, do they have transparency in their supply chain? Tear Fund here in New Zealand, usually I think in the middle of the year, release an ethical clothing guide, which is another thing that you can do. It's like, actually, I'm choosing to make sure that the clothing that I wear has no slavery in any step of its production. So it's things like that. They sound simple, but I know consumption habits take a while to change. Coffee, Kathy, make sure your coffee's always fair trade. So things like that are big steps in the right direction. Another one is support financially. People and organisations who are doing the frontline work, and we have some really reputable organisations here in New Zealand to be able to do that. Volunteer. Start spreading the word. Like, if you've heard this today, don't just keep it to yourself. Share it. Tell something. Tell someone, even if it's just like, oh my goodness, did you know we have slavery here in New Zealand? Start spreading the word. And those are all just some really straightforward places you can start. Can I finish with a bit of an encouragement? Because I know this all sounds a bit bleak and it all sounds a bit hard and we don't quite know what to do and how to start. But I want to just share a brief story. And I was up in Auckland last year and I was at a conference and I met a pastor there and I was talking with him and he told me a story about something that had happened near to where he lived in his community. And they had a Chinese church down the road, and this church one day had somebody turn up on their doorstep in an absolute panic. And it turned out that this man, he asked someone from the church to go with him to the house. And when this person went with him to the house, discovered another 25 Chinese men all had been locked in a small 3-bedroom house and abandoned. And over the course of the next few weeks and months, this church has ended up being the most incredible supportive protective network to this group of men. Mm. And they were saying, you know, we had no idea. We didn't know this happened. We had no plan to do ministry like this. But they literally opened their church and had meals together. They had discipleship. They just loved on these guys. They helped them with translation in terms of visas and going to the authorities and getting the official support that is necessary. And it was just this wonderful example of a church responding to the need of some really vulnerable people in their community. They didn't think it out. They just responded by being the church. And in doing so, you know, have just brought freedom, and they brought Jesus to these guys. And it's exciting.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I knew this was going to be a fun conversation. Thank you for sharing your heart and for taking us on this journey. We just really value what you've brought today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And we look forward to listening in July.
Be great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Changes Ahead podcast.
If that resonated with you,
or you've got thoughts about the changes ahead for the church,
we'd love to hear from you.
So get in touch on Instagram or Facebook at Changes Ahead Cast,
or email us at thechangesaheadpodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.